Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is TJ Kennedy, Acting General Manager for the First Responder Network Authority, FirstNet, within the U.S. Department of Commerce. So, TJ, recognizing your office and your initiative is fairly young, and it's in its infancy given government, you know, terms. I'd like to get a sense of your key strategic priorities going forward. Would you elaborate on them? And perhaps you could identify for us the core components of your strategic roadmap.
So back in March of 2014, we rolled out at our board meeting the strategic roadmap going forward for FirstNet. And that roadmap outlined a number of key things we were going to do over the next 12 months. First and foremost, it talked about a public notice and comment process. And we can talk more in depth about that in just a moment. We also talked about putting together a draft comprehensive RFP. And this comprehensive RFP, the goal is to look at the need to build a nationwide network and all of the components that will lead to sustainability. And this is so important to this public safety endeavor is to have a sustainable network. And that comprehensive RFP is one of the things that will get us there. And the next component is state consultation. And the law has some very specific elements in there for reaching out to cities, counties, states, and other agencies, tribal governments, all related to public safety, and making sure that we consult with them on building this network and on our execution of that and eventually present a plan to each and every state in the country, as well as the territories and the District of Columbia, where we are today. Each of them will receive a plan that we've worked with them on and discussed what will work and not work in their particular state and how broadband, being a little bit different than some of the former technologies that public safety has often relied on, how that will be deployed, how that will be utilized, what kind of applications could be available, and so forth. So that's really what we're very much focused on here, and we've been delivering on that. So not only did we come out and say we're going to do that over the next 12 months, here we are in September. We just rolled out this week at our board meeting the actual public notice and comment and a draft statement of objectives, as well as a kind of a penultimate RFI to ask some really key questions to drive, hopefully, the draft RFP that will be coming out over the next 6 months, and really get industry input, get public safety input, get the public's input, very transparent and open process so that we can drive folks coming to us with key solutions and ideas that we can incorporate into this final RFP.
And establishing the network that you're pursuing really does involve a heavy assessment and deployment effort. And you mentioned the consultation strategy. I'd like to understand a little bit more about that. Can you tell us more about it? In particular, how will it inform what you're going to do and what your final FirstNet system will look like?
One of the key things for us is to look at how does public safety respond today? Where is public safety? So if you think of the state of Virginia as an example, there's a lot of population in Northern Virginia, and it's a little more rural as you go further west, and there's some key elements as you go down the I-95 corridor. There's a lot of federal installations, military bases, and key national security issues as an example for certain elements and installations across the state of Virginia. So each state is going to have a different geography. You're going to have mountains maybe further west. You're going to have the Potomac River and other water bodies that might be an issue. When we were up in Maryland, responding to emergencies on the Chesapeake Bay is a big issue. You typically don't see a cell tower in the middle of the Chesapeake Bay. So how are you going to cover those kinds of large bodies of water and be able to handle the differences that happen there? Also, just different levels of responders. So there's a lot of federal law enforcement in the D.C. metropolitan area, as an example. You also find that in states that have a large military presence. For instance, there are certain, if you go out to Guam or you go to Hawaii, there's a very different set of responders, both local and federal and different kinds of agencies. The weather and different concerns in Minnesota will probably be quite different than Florida. And so the state consultation process is to make sure that we understand the kinds of incidents that happen and the kinds of needs of public safety. Also, the geography differences. Recently, we had a board member and some key staff go to Alaska, and they flew with the Alaska State Troopers to some key villages that aren't serviced by roads, and they have to fly in and out of these particular villages, and looking at what are the differences there and how do we deal with coverage and handle those kinds of communications, because it's very difficult to cover the entire United States, and how we look at that is different from state to state. So our goal is to understand each state as we build this nationwide architecture and this nationwide plan and have that kind of great dialogue with both state and local public safety agencies on how best to do that.
And what are some of the limitations that these folks in the public public safety area are dealing with the current communication systems they use? And what are some of the inherent weaknesses to the current system?
When it comes to land mobile radio systems today, which are a key component and public safety relies on them very, very much, the main issue is that they are on a disparate spectrum in different parts of the country. And so you may have a particular department that is operating in UHF frequencies versus VHF frequencies. You may have a department that's on 700 megahertz versus 800 megahertz. You have some departments on new digitally trunked radio systems and others on analog radio systems. And as responders either help through mutual aid or respond to a situation that's near the jurisdictions of both or during a major incident, often those kind of disparate radio systems can cause issues of communication. Interoperability is often the issue we talk about there. The other issue is on the broadband side, which we're building an LTE system, which is different than a land mobile radio system. And with broadband, typically agencies have relied on what's available commercially today. One of the number one questions we get is during major emergencies is public safety wants to have priority on the system, and they would also like to have what's known as preemption. Mm-hmm. And that ability to, if you think back to the little earthquake that occurred about 2 years ago here on the eastern shore or eastern side of the country in Virginia where it originated, there was a bit of congestion on the cellular networks as you had a rattle kind of go up the eastern seaboard. That kind of congestion can become a big problem for public safety, and we need to make sure that our public safety providers have priority so that during those kinds of events, they either have their own network or have their own network with priority so that they can go ahead and make sure that they're going to get a signal, they're going to go ahead and get a connection, and they're going to be able to pass their transmissions, whether it's related to sending data back and forth, video or voice communications, that will be something they can count on when they need it most.
Mm-hmm. And you've kind of touched on it a little bit, but why does public safety need FirstNet? And what are some of the critical benefits to cities and the public safety folks who are operating there as a result of pursuing this effort?
I think one of the most important things is nationwide operability. I actually would love to get away from interoperability and just have a nationwide network based upon LTE technology that everybody operates on. One example is if you were to get on a plane and travel to California tomorrow, when you get off the plane in California and you turn on your cell phone, what happens? Mm-hmm. You connect to the network and it works. Nobody even knows any different. And if you were to be a police officer, let's say, with a radio today, and you tried to do that same thing, that would not work. So we want to build a nationwide network with the same spectrum, with operability from day one across the network. Also, we want to make sure that public safety gets to benefit from the innovation that's happening today with technology. If you walk down the street here and look at any 15, 16, 17-year-old child, and they happen to have a smartphone in their hand, and they have 100 apps on there, they have in their hand a more powerful computer than probably you and I even had 5 years ago. Also, if you look at law enforcement, typically they haven't necessarily benefited from the innovation that's happened in the last 5 to 10 years, because the kind of dedicated broadband capability that they need with priority has not existed for them. Some have put some initial capabilities onto commercial networks. Some have leveraged what they can here and there. Some have leveraged Wi-Fi at police stations or fire stations or emergency medical services buildings. But what if we got into the future that an ambulance that's in a rural area on a freeway is able to connect with video and really have a two-way video conversation between the back of an ambulance and a trauma surgeon at a hospital? What if we were able to have the ability for firefighters to be on scene of a major incident and be able to access all the building drawings and all the hazardous materials information for a major hospital or a major commercial building? Today, a lot of that information may have been gathered. It might even be on a computer, but it may not be in the responding vehicle and it may not be up to date. And so having that ability for real-time situational awareness and that ability to have a network where and when they need it is so critical. And I think that for public safety, going to a priority network like FirstNet, having the spectrum being the same across the country, having that operability built in across the country where everybody can communicate with each other, but even more importantly, leverage the tools and innovation of high-speed data, having broadband. Very often, most of the technologies have been narrowband that public safety has looked at in the past, and they haven't had the ability to necessarily, you know, share as much of the rich information, as I said, as maybe a teenager does today. And really, you know, I feel that they deserve to have that capability, and we would like to give them that.
Mm-hmm. So before we talk about your specific outreach strategy and processes, I want to, you're a champion for this. You have to be out there. I assume you're out there dealing with a lot of the associations which represent the public safety folks. And what I want to get at is, what do you say to them? What can they expect from this system? And how are they going to change the way they do their work?
If I was a public safety agency today, I would believe that I'm going to rely on my key land mobile radio systems that I've used and trusted, but I'm also going to benefit from having the rich applications and the high-speed broadband data that I don't necessarily have in either every fire truck, ambulance, or police car today, and also having the ability to innovate on things that will keep my public safety first responders safer. So if you look at a firefighter and having the ability to maybe have a device that they would know that if they go in to fight a fire inside of a building, that the fire incident commander would know exactly what floor in the house that they're fighting a fire on they are. Are they in the basement or the first floor or the second floor? And also having the ability, like you have in your cell phone today, that there's an accelerometer. So if they happen to fall down or be trapped, or they happen to have fallen because they're now unconscious and have run out of air, you can have machine-to-machine transmission to be able to see how much air each firefighter has. You would maybe be able to see their heart rate and whether or not they're getting close to having a significant health incident as part of that. And this is the kind of future innovation that I would expect to see because of this nationwide public safety broadband network. What about with a police officer who has an in-car video camera today that goes to a digital video recorder in their trunk? Very important part of what public safety does every single day. If you think of a state trooper out on a freeway, having that ability from an evidence perspective is terrific. But what about the ones that when they pull somebody over on the side of the road and that camera is running and the person comes out and starts shooting at them? Today, that video goes to that trunk and that might be useful in the future. But what if he could push an emergency button and that video automatically sends to a dispatch center or anytime that particular officer calls for help and they can immediately see the suspect that's shooting at them. They can see the license plate on the car. They can have a picture or a video of the incident as it goes down. And the nearest officers near them could be sent that video. So as they're responding, they know what car they're looking for. They know what the incident is that just occurred. They know who the suspect is, or the dispatcher could run the license plate and say, this is where they're from. This may be where they're going. Having that kind of real-time safety information, I think, can save lives. And when I work with our team every day, although we're working with technology and building infrastructure, really at the end of the day, our goal is to help save the lives of police officers, firefighters, and paramedics and the key citizens that they serve.
So I'd like to delve into a little bit of your outreach strategy and processes. What's the purpose of your outreach? Is it to define requirements, educate, raise awareness, all of the above? And more importantly, what tactics and best practices are you engaging to make this successful, this outreach successful?
I think it is all of the above. I think our goal is to educate the entire public safety community on the benefits of broadband, tell them what is different and of some of the technologies that they've used in the past, but also most importantly, to make sure they're aware of what we're doing and to get their input. It's two-way listening. It's outreach and consultation. And we want to make sure that we're hearing from them what they need. We also want to make sure that we're hearing from them what they understand and don't understand about as we move forward. This is a big shift in technologies. It's a different kind of technology. And so having both technical experts and public safety expertise as part of that outreach and consultation team is very important. I come from a public safety background, and a number of our key staff in the outreach and consultation department also have a public safety background. And being able to translate to police officers, firefighters, and emergency medical technicians how this technology will benefit them, how this network will make a difference in their day-to-day responses in the future, I think is a really important part. Also, like I mentioned earlier about the geographic differences, our job is to go out and make sure we understand what's going on in the remote parts of Alaska and what they need from a public safety communication system. We understand how they're going to utilize high-speed data, understand the differences between what goes on in northern Montana versus the southern border with Texas, understand the interactions between federal, state, county, city agencies, understand the unique needs of tribal lands and tribal communities and what they need in their public safety communications infrastructure. All of that is an important role to our outreach approach. We really have taken an approach of trying to share as much data with everyone as possible. We've really focused on putting a ton of information on our website. We have some great communication staff that focus on social media and pushing information out on a daily basis. One of the the things you're finding with younger firefighters and paramedics and EMTs is they're certainly a consumer of social media and other forms of communication and very much live on it day in and day out. And so they're very eager to see this network built, and they're also consuming data differently than maybe I did 20 years ago when I started in public safety.
So how do you envision public safety using, say, mobile apps in a FirstNet environment?
I think that the explosion that you and I have seen in mobile apps on smart devices over the last 10 years, we're going to see that same kind of explosion and innovation in the public safety space. If you think about some of the examples I gave earlier for firefighters or examples for EMTs in the back of an ambulance in a rural area to have that two-way video communication, let's say, with an emergency room, pretty fascinating the kinds of apps. Also, if you look at some of the wearable technology that's out there today and some of the new stuff that's coming out, having the ability to put a bracelet onto a patient, think of a Fitbit or other things, but to be able to get a heart rate or a blood pressure just by putting that on and automatically sent to both the paramedic who was treating on them, but also to be able to send that to a hospital. Today, a paramedic may have to get on a radio or a cell phone and explain all the vital signs to an emergency room. All that could be sent with very small bits of data in a very real-time fashion. Also having the ability to deal with mass casualties. So if you got to a scene and there was 20 injured people, what if you had technology that you could put on each of those patients and not only send vital signs and make sure they all get transported by who is the most critical, but also making sure if you were in a metropolitan area, let's say they may go to four different hospitals, making sure that you're tracking as an incident commander, how many are sent to this hospital? How many went to that hospital? Are we overloading one facility versus another? A lot of this is done on a whiteboard today. Some of it is done on a laptop today, but we need to get down to where it's done with technology in the field, and it's very mobile. And I think the amount of innovation will just be explosive. One of the other unique aspects for public safety is I think that they will help drive the market for human factors in using this technology. So if you were to look at headsets and heads-up displays and other things, the average consumer might not be that focused on some of that today. But what if you're driving a large fire engine down the street? We don't want them looking at a handheld device, correct? But what if they had a heads-up display that there's traffic up ahead and they might want to turn off and take a side street to get to a car accident and have that kind of heads-up information for the engineer who's driving that fire engine? Really important information. What about voice capabilities so that a police officer could actually, you know, give commands to get information purely by voice without even having to push a button per se? You know, and those kinds of things that are very innovative. There's things like license plate readers, but being able to, when a vehicle's pulled over, to run that information without the officer having to do it manually. Those kinds of technologies, I think, will really make a huge difference.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that this technology exists, or some form of it.
Most of this technology is already existing today. It just hasn't necessarily been adapted to public safety. And also, they haven't had a dedicated network. And so putting that network in, building FirstNet, is really the key step in getting this capability, I think, to really grow, and also empowering public safety to come up with amazing ideas that we haven't even thought of yet.
How is FirstNet pursuing its outreach strategy with key stakeholders? We will ask TJ Kennedy, acting general manager of FirstNet, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.